It's Cody and Connor with Between Two Birds. It's the best sports podcast that you've ever heard. With the Orioles and Ravens, it's the best of Baltimore. With all the sporting news that you're looking for. Between Two Birds, enjoy the show. Between Two Birds, here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of appropriate ages, welcome to the Between Two Birds podcast. I'm your host, Cody Colston.
And I am Connor Gersio.
And this is episode 17, and we are horrible at schedule planning. We apologize for the lack of content the past month. It's been kind of crazy with school starting up and the big snowfall we had, but I mean, we've had excuses for all the other times, but whatever. It is what it is. We're definitely going to try to be more consistent. I know I said that on the New Year's show, but that, but we're really taking it to heart this time. It's end of the first month, so, you know, we have 11 more to go, I think. 11 more, right, Connor?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Oh, yeah, 11 more months. New format. Yeah, we're changing up the format a bit based on some suggestions by one or two people. So we're going to go from it's going to be like league news, and then we're going to filter down to specific news. Also, the new release dates, it's going to be somewhere like Thursday night, Friday morning. It's going to be in between there. Based how on our schedules are going right now, so just a heads up on that. I believe that covers all the news for the podcast. Did I miss anything, Connor?
I think you got everything.
Okay. All right. So with that, let's hop right into football. So like I said, we're going to cover league news first, and it's going to be part of the same with baseball later on. So, Broncos versus Panthers in the Super Bowl. Who you got, Connor?
I am taking... See, my heart says Panthers, but my brain says Broncos. But I'm going to take the Panthers ultimately.
See, I'm big on the Panthers. I personally think them and the Cardinals are probably the two best teams in the league. But I can't... I doubted Peyton against... The Peyton and the Broncos, I doubted them against Brady. I don't think I can doubt them again, so I think I got to take the Broncos on this one.
See, I would, but it's the number one defense against the number two defense, and Cam Newton just tore up probably one of the better defenses in the league in Arizona. Nothing has stopped the Panthers, really, except for the Falcons late in the season when the Panthers probably weren't trying as much because they already had the number one seed locked up fully. But like you said, you can't count out Peyton this year just because this might be his last ride. He's probably just not saying it publicly because he likes to stay humble.
Yeah, I mean, if he wins the Super Bowl, he's going to go out. I guarantee you that. I could put a guarantee on that.
I wouldn't mind him retiring after Super Bowl.
The thing about Newton tearing up Carolina is that Carson Palmer committed 6 turnovers that game, and when you give any quarterback that number of tries and, you know, normally good field position considering he's turning the ball over, I think they're going to succeed. So, and I don't know, that's a little bit of an iffy point for me.
Well, my only point for the Panthers is they're young and they're quick and they're flashy. Does that slow down Manning, who's a little older, a little bit more slower, not as quick and nimble out of the pocket as he was used to be, as limited as he's always been, but he is going up against a defense he hasn't seen this season, and it's really quick, really fast to force Carson Palmer to have that many turnovers. Russell Wilson struggled against them. It might just be a thing of old versus new.
Right. It's definitely going to be interesting. It's definitely like an old versus new thing because the Panthers defense is one of the more athletic defenses. I mean, you have, you know, Kawan Short. He's a beast. He's an athletic freak. Luke Kuechly, Josh Norman, Kurt Coleman. All these guys are really athletic. And then you have Peyton, who's not the most athletic, and he's the master of the pre-read. You know, he'll dissect a defense no problem. So it's definitely going to be interesting, but I think ultimately I'm going to take the Broncos. And You're going to take the Panthers. So we'll see how that plays out. We're not going to talk about the Pro Bowl because Pro Bowl's stupid, right, Connor?
Yeah, I don't even know who's going, what is the even the process of making the teams anymore.
Well,
It's
they drafted Wednesday.
kind of like the NHL where they draft the players for the, it's not like league versus league like the NBA and the MLB, which I don't really particularly like. I like it for the NHL just because I don't really watch the NHL All-Star game, but that kind of makes me want to watch it. The NFL Pro Bowl has just never been exciting to me.
They need to bring back the skills competition. That's the big thing with that.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, we could go on all day talking about the ways to improve the Pro Bowl, and it's already been beat to death, so we can move on. Next big move, the Rams are officially moving back to LA. What are your thoughts, Connor?
I like it. St. Louis is a baseball town. The Cardinals have been big there
Ooh,
since the 50s.
watch it there, Josh Hamilton. It's a baseball town.
Honestly, if you're going to be the second biggest city in the country and not have a football team, that's kind of odd just because football is America's sport now, whether you want to believe that or not. It's that big of a camaraderie in America to where New York has a team, New York has two teams, Chicago has one, LA now might have two. The Chargers are rumored to move there as well. I don't think that will particularly happen
We can
anytime
touch on that in a
soon.
second. I have some points to make about that, so.
Yeah, but ultimately, I do like the Rams moving to LA. It gives them a new face, a new identity, especially with the young team that they are and upcoming. They've missed the playoffs the last couple years, but I do think they have the pieces to get there. And especially in a division where, you got the Cardinals and the Seahawks, but they do well in their division, surprisingly.
See, the thing, I feel bad for the fans. I'd never it's never a good thing when the team moves, even though the Rams for LA were from LA originally. It's kind of that it's a very weird situation because they were in LA, they moved to St. Louis, now they're going back. A bunch of people in LA are happy. A lot of the old LA Rams players are happy, like Eric Dickerson. He was really happy that the Rams are moving back. He was just ecstatic about it. I definitely feel like the fans got dicked over by the owner. Is it Kroenke? Is that how you say it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know how you say it either, so I'm just gonna say Rams owner. But he dicked the fans over, and he left a giant bill because the city of St. Louis, was trying to work out a deal, like trying to put stadium plans down, and they spent a bunch of money on like architecture firms building designs for a new stadium, and then he ultimately leaves, and the taxpayers are left footing the bill. And I think now the city is suing the Rams. It's gonna be there's something like that going on, and it's definitely gonna be interesting to how that plays out because that sets a new precedent about sports teams moving. But I'm kind of excited, to be honest. The thing I'm excited most about that, and this is putting exciting in quotation marks because I'm not a big fan of the whole deal, is the new stadium. That thing is like crazy looking, and I kind of want to see it come to life. Especially since, like we're probably going to get the combine's probably going to move there, and we may even have two teams there. And it's this weird thing. If you haven't, look up the plans if you haven't, because it's kind of like this weird thing, like it's like a glass dome almost. Have you seen the plans?
I have. They've had several different plans over the years for a possible LA team, but I do like this current one the most. I think it would be good for two teams, like if the Chargers were to move as well. And it's a lot better than the Jets slash Giants Stadium, which looks like a stack of CDs.
Well, I mean,
Google.
it's New York. You can't really do much because land is at a premium.
Yeah, so they put it in New Jersey, and it looks like a pile of plates. So, I overall, this design of the stadium is really fascinating. Like you said, the combine will probably move there. Of course, they're going to have the Super Bowl there in a couple of years,
Oh yeah,
probably.
definitely. The Super Bowl is gonna go there. Like, I think they said they expect it to be done by like 2018. 2019, something like that. I can't remember the date that they expect it to be done, but while that's doing, the Rams are going to be playing in the Rose Bowl, so.
I kind of figured they would be playing where USC plays, which is, you know, it's the only football stadium in town, unless they wanted to play in Dodger Stadium, which I doubt they will.
I don't even think that was an option.
Yeah.
I don't even think Dodger Stadium could handle a football team, because I think it's a pure baseball stadium. But yeah, and the thing about another team moving there, is that whether it be the Chargers or the Raiders, because the Raiders are also possibly going there if the Chargers can't work out a deal, is that no matter what, they're going to be playing second fiddle to the Rams, because the Rams have the oldest, have the fan base there. I think the Raiders do too, but it's kind of weird because I think the Ram, because if the Rams are moving first, everyone's going to jump on the Rams bandwagon. Whatever team comes second, you're not going to probably get anybody, whether it be the Oakland who was there, the Raiders who were there, and definitely not San Diego, because San Diego has trouble filling their own stadium, so I don't understand how you're going to go from worse, from bad to worse. Like, I don't understand the process of thinking with the Chargers owner moving to L.A. The biggest thing I could think is that the Rams, like, the price of the Rams, like, the value of the Rams, it, like, jumped, like, $500 million or something crazy like that as soon as the move was announced.
That is very insane.
yeah.
It's imaginable, but you just hear the numbers and it just sounds like a lot of money, which it obviously is.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it plays out, especially.
So, and my clock is going off. That's really nice.
Yeah, because Connor's not present with us currently because it's very late and he was at the Wizards game, so. Damn you, Connor.
Ding dong. It's time for you to go to bed.
oh my god. I'm shaking my head since you guys can't see me, but yeah.
Dead air.
Hashtag. Dead air, yeah, dead air. moving on. So unless you have anything to say.
No, it's pretty straightforward. Rams to LA, Chargers maybe.
Oakland maybe. Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I'm definitely kind of excited for that new stadium, but anyway. Moving on, Calvin Johnson, there's some weird rumors going around about him possibly retiring. And there's the LOL Detroit thing going around, like they're going to end two great careers because Barry Sanders retired and like just like at the end of his prime, like towards the end of his prime. And now you have Calvin Johnson, who is, I don't think, in his prime anymore. He's definitely on the decline, but he's definitely considering retirement. And it's just, I don't know. How do you feel about this, Connor?
I feel bad for Calvin Johnson just because he was drafted by the Detroit Lions.
I have felt sorry for this man for the past 8 years because he got drafted by the Lions.
He's been a wasted talent there for years. He's made two playoff appearances. He's won zero games. It's very sad.
I wouldn't go as far as to call him wasted talent because he does get used. He's like the entire offense there. I would definitely think that he doesn't.
Well, I say wasted talent in the sense that there's nothing around him to help him actually like win a championship or win right. just a playoff game.
Right.
Like, he would be valuable to literally, like, any other team. Besides, like, you know, Cleveland or, like...
Believeland.
Yeah. Like, the bottom of the bottom teams. But he right. could go to, like, any team that's, like, mid-road, like the Jets or even the Rams, and help that team go to the playoffs.
Right. It would... you gotta feel for the guy. And it's going to be sad when he retires because he is a fun player to watch. I mean, he has like amazing plays where he's just a playmaker, like plain and simple. Even at his age, where he's definitely on the decline. Like, excuse me, something in my throat. But he's just a playmaker and he's fun to watch. I still remember I was like that highlight of him in Georgia Tech, I think it was, where he like quite literally caught a ball behind him and like threw his legs out behind him in front of himself. Like, it's a crazy highlight if you haven't seen it. Definitely go watch it. And that's like kind of a testament to how Calvin Johnson it was in his prime, like how dominant he was of a receiver and how athletically crazy it all was.
My favorite thing about him was when you'd go play Madden football, you just chuck it up to him every time, and you have like four defenders on the guy, and he'll still catch it.
Pretty much.
And he did that in real life too, which just made it a whole lot better.
Yeah. It's definitely disappointing to see the shape Detroit was in this year, because Jim Caldwell's not a good head coach. And what's-his-face Lombardi was a horrible offensive coordinator. And that offense was just stagnant. That defense was above average because they had guys like Darius Slay. So I just feel for Detroit. I feel for Detroit more than I feel for Cleveland, because, you know, Detroit has been, like, they've never won anything, I don't think. Like, the Cleveland has, like, championships from pre-Super Bowl, but I don't think Detroit has anything.
Well, the Tigers won the World Series in 1984.
Well, I'm talking about the Lions.
Oh, well, the Lions, yeah, they have nothing. At least Detroit has, like, the Pistons and the Tigers, and then the Red Wings are amazing.
Yeah.
Cleveland has just nothing. The Indians haven't won since the 40s. The Browns have never won anything. And then the Cavaliers can't win.
No, the Indians. I thought the Indians won the year Major League came out or whatever.
No. They went to the playoffs in the late 90s. They never won anything.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. And then you have the Cavaliers, even with LeBron, can't go to the go win the championship. So, you know, as far as that goes, I'm still poor Cleveland. Detroit at least has, like, the Red Wings and the Tigers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're talking about an individual franchise, though, I feel worse for Detroit.
Yeah, because they have more hope, because they actually have more decent players on the roster right now.
Yeah, and, I mean, and they're 0-16. I mean, what more can you say?
Yeah, how many weeks did it take them to win one game this year? Like 9?
Yeah, something crazy like that. When their roster wasn't even that bad. Like, it was better than Cleveland, in my opinion. But I digress. Moving on. Some coaching changes around the league. We're going to hit one by one. And you just kind of want to get through them.
Yeah, just because they're kind of less insignificant. Yeah, it's really old news.
Chip Kelly, he gets fired by Philly. And San Francisco picks him up. So, bye, Tom Sula.
Which is sad, because Jim Tom Sula was like the perfect guy. Like, you've never heard of him. You have no idea where he came from. He could have been a plumber. He could have been.
He like looks like a plumber. He looks like a Super Mario.
He looks like a. He could be like a volunteer firefighter. Like, he just came out of nowhere. And like, I love the graphic they ran after they won week one. It's like when coaches by winning percentage, they had him at one at first at 1-0.
Yeah, I saw that.
With the little asterisks next to him.
No, I the thing I loved about the Tom, like, people making fun of Tom Sula is Adult Swim does this thing. It's called Carl Stone Cold Lock of the Century of the Week. And it's, like, it's just Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, like, shitting on teams and talking about it. And they make this, because Carl is, like, this, like, balding, middle-aged man with, like, chest hair who wears, like, a tank top and a gold chain. And has a big mustache, and they're just, he just, like, insults Tom Sula, and they have, like, a picture of Carl and Tom Sula side by side, and they, like, they look really similar. It's pretty funny. But, yeah, that was my favorite part about all that. But Chip Kelly, he gets fired after 2 years in Philly, and, see, I can't really feel bad for Kelly, because he got complete control over that roster and absolutely and like traded and got rid of a lot of their talent. I mean, Jeremy Maclin left, DeSean Jackson left, they traded DeSean McCoy. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie was on them at one point. I don't know if that was under Kelly though. So, but they lost a lot of talent under him, and he implemented his own guys in his own system, and it fell flat. They traded Nick Foles for Sam Bradford. I don't get that. Signing DeMarco Murray and the way See, the thing that bothers me about the DeMarco Murray signing is the fact that they misused him the entire season. They don't. No one understood. Kelly didn't understand that DeMarco Murray is a between the tackles runner. He runs between the tackles. That's where he. And maybe an off tackle every once in a while, but that's where he succeeded, is lining up behind the quarterback. He cannot run out of shotgun. LeSean McCoy succeeded at running out of shotgun because LeSean McCoy is an east to west runner. He was a shifty guy who made moves and made, you know, created space for himself. DeMarco Murray is not that type of guy. He's a north-south runner. He runs downfield. He runs over people. He's not going to make people miss a lot of the time. So there's my rant on that. Because I had DeMarco Murray in fantasy. He was my number one pick, so I'm still pissed off about that.
Murray went first round in my draft, and the guy in my league did not like that at all. So
yeah, and not to mention Ryan. There's a reason Ryan Matthews succeeded more there at the running back. It's because he's more of a shifty runner. He's more of a in the LeSean McCoy mold. You know, he can create space for himself, and he's a little bit faster.
I saw a tweet like week 16 of the year, and it was wow, nice to see this Murray guy finally panning out after so long. Or no, it was like, where did this Murray guy come from? He's really good.
Yeah, like I said, I can't feel bad for Kelly because he got complete control over the roster and like completely shit on everything. And apparently that's changing in San Francisco. He's not getting complete control of the roster, which is no surprise because that's what Balke and who's the Niners owner?
Jed York?
York, yeah. Balke and York, they fought with Harbaugh over, you know, him having control of the roster and everything like that. So it's no surprise that Kelly's not getting any control, so he's just going to stick to coaching. Maybe that's a blessing for him because he's not a GM. That's all I really have to say about that.
Yeah, and then there are a couple other moves you can...
Coughlin officially resigned instead of being fired. And the Giants offensive coordinator, McAdoo, he takes over. You want to take this, Connor?
I've never heard of Ben McAdoo in my entire life, so...
You're also not that big of a football fan.
No. I'm a casual fan, so... I know who Tom Coughlin... Casual! I know who Tom Coughlin is, though. He's the angry man that runs up and down the sideline, even though when the Giants are up by, like, 40 points. He has just the shock and awe face after every time like Eli Manning throws an interception. And you just have to think, how are you not used to this yet?
That's a great question. How are you not used to this yet? But yeah, I don't really have an opinion on that because, I mean...
The Giants are still like a 6-10 team.
Damn.
Well, they are to me at least, I think. They have talent, but they don't put it together.
Right. I definitely feel you on that one. But it's just Coughlin has been kind of a staple. Like, that's been the Giants' identity for the longest time. It's been Eli and Coughlin. And it's, you know, you kind of, him leaving is, I'm kind of sad to see because I kind of like Coughlin. Like, after the, they did that, America's game. They did it on the 07 Giants about them winning and beating the Patriots, and it was kind of fun to see how Coughlin ran the team. And it, you know, I had a lot more respect for him after watching that because that was the season he realized that, you know, to be a little bit more of a player's coach, because before that he was a lot more hard-nosed, but he relaxed a lot that year and they won a Super Bowl. I mean, they won two Super Bowls. So he's a good coach, and he deserves to have a job. But, you know, it's just kind of sad to see him leave the Giants.
Yeah, it's just a familiar face that's leaving somewhere, and it's going to be weird to see if he coaches somewhere else, even if he does, because he turned down the Philadelphia job.
Yeah, which doesn't surprise me.
No, not at all.
Another coaching change. Adam Gase gets hired to coach the. Adam Gase gets hired to coach the Dolphins. He's been like a potential like head coach candidate for the past 3 years. So I'm finally glad to see him, you know, prove himself, because NFL needs new blood. I think he's the youngest coach, isn't he? I think he might be the youngest coach.
He might be. It was Mike Tomlin for a while.
Yeah. Shit, Mike Tomlin's only like 28, so.
He was like 22. He was like 25 when they won the Super Bowl or something like that.
Yeah, something crazy like that, which is ridiculous. But yeah, Adam Gase takes over the Dolphins. Definitely going to be interested to see, because they have their offense is pretty stacked. I mean, they have Lamar Miller, Ryan Tannehill is at an average to an above average quarterback, Jarvis Landry, Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker. Isn't Greg Jennings still on their team somewhere?
He might be.
He's somewhere. They have Jordan Cameron. Their offensive line isn't too shabby. Like that's a good offense on paper, and he's an offensive minded coach. So I think the Dolphins are going to ball out next year.
It's just a matter of if the defense picks up, because you're paying Ndamukong Suh a lot of money, and he struggled this past season.
Well, I think, he definitely struggled early on, and I think that was more of a coaching thing. I read a breakdown, I can't remember too much of it, about pretty much how the Dolphins' defense, how they're not using Sue's strengths, and how, like, that's a shitty thing to do, because, you know, use your best player and let him do what he does best, and then they weren't letting him do that. And he's also a leader on that defense, so I think that's a big thing right there. So you hear a lot of, you know, he sits down with the coaches and the ownership, so he's a leader on that defense. So that's that kind of, you know, ups the value of his of, you know, him being on the team. But I definitely think Dolphins are looking like my dark horse pick next year, depending on how the draft goes. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they perform next year, definitely.
I feel like they're always my dark horse pick, and they always fail me. So I'm thinking they go like 5-11 this year.
5-11. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either if they just completely flounder, because it's the AFC East. So the only team that's guaranteed to make it out of there alive is the Patriots. That's about it for the league news. Focus on some Raven news.
The little that there is.
Yeah, a little that there is, because there's really enough. The big one being that Steve Smith is coming back. So the Ravens actually have an offense next year.
67-year-old wide receiver Steve Smith is coming back.
can we bring back Derek Mason while we're at it?
Derek Mason, Mark Clayton.
Yeah, what's Mark Clayton up to?
He's probably running a used car dealership. Who else? Travis Taylor. You know, bring back all the old Ravens receivers.
Oh, yeah, I remember Travis Taylor. Damn.
That's like 2003, 2004. Like when Kyle Bowler was their quarterback.
Yeah.
Those teams won games somehow. And it was they won was like 9-6.
Don't even kid yourself. It was the defense. But yeah, it's you know, definitely a good thing he comes back. It just seems like because the Ravens are really bad at developing wide receivers. Let's just come out and say it.
Torrey Smith was not fully what he could have been, I think, which is kind of sad.
The thing about Torrey Smith is, as much as I love the guy, he's very much a one-trick pony. He has speed and not much else after that. I mean, his hands aren't that good. He doesn't like going over the middle. I mean, he was an outside, you know, deep ball threat. That was the role he played.
He played the role of go deep and draw the penalty.
Yeah. I mean, especially towards the end of his career with the Ravens, that's definitely what happened. But it's he was a one-trick pony, and I mean, I wouldn't call that developing a wideout, because you're not really doing anything there. You're just letting him use his strengths. He was never an all-around receiver, and he didn't really develop. I can name a number of wide receivers that didn't pan out. I was like Demetrius Williams. He reminds me of Demetrius Williams a little bit, because Demetrius Williams was fast, a little bit bigger, and you know, everyone hyped him up. So I mean, it is what it is.
The Orioles can't develop pitching, and the Ravens can't develop wide
Yeah,
receivers.
exactly. but it's definitely a good thing he comes back because they would have absolutely no receivers outside of that. And I think he definitely has a better year and he goes out on a better note. And it's definitely going to help that Perriman's coming back next year because I think that's definitely something the Ravens missed for a majority of the year was having that deep ball threat to keep defenses honest. I mean, as much as we just like shit on Torrey Smith for being a deep ball, only a deep ball threat, every team needs a deep ball threat because it keeps the defense honest so they can't play up on you every time.
Wait, who did you say was coming back?
Steve Smith.
No, the deep ball threat.
Perriman.
I've never heard of him.
Does he even exist?
No, I've never seen a picture of him in a Ravens uniform, outside of like the photo day picture.
I'm pretty sure he's a predator.
He's just like he's there, but he's not.
He is the enigma of the NFL.
He like didn't speak at a press conference for a long time, and everyone's like, "Is this guy real?" Did the
Yeah.
Ravens draft a ghost wide receiver and convince us that he's going to be good, or are we just
Did they draft a fake person?
they drafted a Madden-generated name, and they were going to just find some guy on the street and say, "Hey, you're a Breshad Perriman now, and you're always going to be injured, and you're going to retire early." We want to hype up our fans for disappointment.
Now I'm sad.
Hashtag conspiracy theories with Connor.
Connor's conspiracy theories.
Breshad Perriman is a fake person. Until I meet him, he's a fake person.
Right, moving on. Ed Reed is hired as the assistant defensive backs coach for the Bills. We actually touched on this a little bit because me and Connor were on Baltimore Sports Today, which I recommend you check out on BaltimoreSportsReport.com and on iTunes because we were on it for 3 episodes. And that
Yes.
was a lot of fun.
Zach and Jab let us do 3 whole episodes with them, and
That's the most trust anyone has ever placed in me.
we're sorry if your ratings went down immediately after those were released. But yeah,
Yeah.
we talked about Ed Reed going to the Bills. I have no general feeling about it. I know some Ravens fans are upset. That's okay. I don't understand why. But it's a coaching job for like he's an assistant defensive backs coach. He's not even like the full-on defensive backs
Yeah.
coach.
I mean, he's a we're just going to touch on this briefly, but yeah, it's Rex is his guy. Like 8 out of the 12 years Ed spent in the NFL, Rex was his defensive coordinator. So, I mean, he went to the Jets because Rex was the head coach there, and it's obvious that Ed loves the guy, so I mean, it's not too surprising he went there and I'm fine with him going there. I mean, it is what it is. If he comes back, he comes back. If he doesn't, he doesn't. I mean, I'm kind of indifferent on the whole thing. Dude, stop yawning, Connor. You ruined the recording. God.
No.
No. All right. Moving on, since we already talked about that in extent somewhere else. The 2000 Ravens were named the best Ravens team by ESPN. I disagree. That 06 team is still better. It's still leagues ahead of the 2000 team, in my opinion. The 2000 team had one of the best defenses of all time. Yes. The 2006 team had a record-setting defense and a great offense.
Yeah, they actually had a decent quarterback.
Yeah, they had Steve McNair.
Steve McNair compared to half, who was it? Trent Dilfer and who
Trent
else?
Dilfer, Tony Banks, and I forget who the last one was.
That team won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. If a defense can win a Super Bowl with if a team can win a Super Bowl with that as their quarterback, you got to give props to either the running back or the defense. And that's who they gave props to because they had Priest Holmes, Jamal Lewis, and that great defense. So, it's definitely a great a great team, but I would definitely still say the 2006 Ravens are much better.
The one team I had fun watching the most was the 2008 team. The 2006 team was you know, the best record, the best regular season record of all time.
2008, that was rookie Flacco, right?
Rookie Flacco, rookie Ray Rice.
Oh
rookie...
yeah, that's yeah. They beat like the 14-2 Titans in the playoffs. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was a fun year just because you know, they went in as a wild card. They lost to the Steelers three times, which sucks, but they went into the playoffs. I think they were 10-6,
something like that.
Yeah, and that was the year like the Wildcat was running rampant in the NFL, and Troy Smith threw a pass to Joe Flacco during a game, and that was probably
one
of
my. I don't think it was that year. I think that was the next year.
No, it was 2008 because I went to a game against the Raiders in Baltimore. It was my last football game before this past season.
Okay, all right, I'll take your word on that then. but yeah, that's all I really have to say about that. I'm not going to pull out any statistics or anything, but the 2006 Ravens are what got me into football. So. Damn, it's already been 10 years since 2006. Wow, I just looked at the calendar. But yeah, that's the team that got me into football, and it's going to hold a special place in my heart, and I definitely do think that's the best Ravens team. Moving on, John Urschel, the Ravens guard center, who has a degree, a master's in mathematics from Penn State. He is starting his PhD at MIT this offseason.
Nerd. No.
GIF.
Yeah, I wish I was that smart.
I mean, the dude plays in the NFL, and he's going for his doctorate.
That is, honestly, that's really awesome. It kind of compares, and not as much because he's going for a doctorate. Last year, when Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays was rehabbing from his injury, he was going to Duke. And Duke isn't that easy to get into. So, still kind of cool. Obviously, Urschel going for his doctorate at MIT is obviously amazing. Dude's a whiz mathematician. I would like to have him tutor me for my school. So,
teach me how to school, Johnny.
John. So, Urschel, if you're listening, what are quadratic functions and how do I do them?
God. Oh, we're not. I don't even. Why do you do this to me, Connor?
What did I do?
Everything. It's definitely cool. I mean, he's probably going to be the smartest guy in the NFL. And that's actually. I mean, that wouldn't be saying much.
No, that's not saying anything.
that's not saying anything. But yeah, it's definitely cool to have a guy with a PhD in the NFL. I don't know if that's ever been done before, but like a legit PhD. Like, I'm not talking about like some
like the Shaquille O'Neal PhD or whatever.
No, not the honorary PhD. I'm talking about like a baloney PhD from like. A weird, like, religious school. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like...
they're pretty easy to get.
Yeah. Stuttering on my words here, I think it's cool. Urschel put out an article in Derek Jeter's The Players Tribune about liking football and knowing the risk of brain injury, but still practicing math like every day and working his brain because he feels that when he works his brain, it helps him re-heal from a concussion faster.
Yeah, and he also talked about how like a lot of the the thing about like playing in the NFL, it's like the rush you get from playing, like doing a sport, and people get hooked on that high, so that's what they do. But he's really interesting with the Players Tribune because he's actually released a couple articles. He did an article when they changed the PAT, and he talked about, you know, the chances of how that changed the chances of, you know, converting and, you know, if teams would go for two more and stuff like that. which is interesting. I remember reading it. I enjoyed reading it. I recommend looking it up. But yeah, that was he's a smart guy, and I'm jelly.
He probably has the best smack talk. They're just saying, blah, blah, blah. He goes, well, I have a PhD. I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor. Fuck you. Well, he doesn't have his PhD yet, but
Well, when he gets it.
when he gets his PhD. All right. Well, I think that wraps up the football portion of the show. Anything else you want to say before we go to break?
Nope.
All right. We'll be right back with our mailbag. Exciting. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to what we like to call the segue. In this week's segue is the mailbag. That was horrible.
I sent out a tweet asking people to send me questions. For future reference, you can send questions to connorgercio@gmail.com.
BetweenTwoBirds@gmail.com is also acceptable if you really care.
Either one will be counted for the mailbag.
Yeah. So we got a couple questions. We're gonna answer some of them. You want to read the first one, Connor?
Sure. This one comes from my good friend Tev. He is a New York Yankees fan. He writes, "Hello, guys. Longtime emailer, first time listener. My question: if you were the Yankees, would you start Greg Bird or Mark Teixeira at first base on opening day? Both have their benefits, but which do you see helping the Yankees more?" Personally, I'm starting Greg Bird just because he's younger, he has more room to improve, and Mark Teixeira is getting really old and is becoming more or less trade bait.
See, the thing, I have to go with Teixeira on this one because you're getting a guaranteed above average glove at first base. That's the big thing. You get that short porch in right field, which Teixeira has been known to abuse. And I feel like you ease Bird in. Like, I feel like you should, honestly, I think it should be more of a platoon than anything, with Teixeira taking a majority of the starts. But I mean, it kind of, the Yankees are kind of in a weird spot because A-Rod ties up that DH spot. You have older guys in like Beltran who they're forced to start. You can't put them anywhere. Like you can't put anybody. You can't put him in the outfield because they have Ellsbury and Gardner. Like you can't move Teixeira or Greg Bird to a corner outfield spot. But I have to go with Teixeira and or a platoon option because I have a lot of issues with starting a young guy full time at first base, like, taking him off the leash and giving him full rein.
I see where you're coming from. Both obviously, like he said, have their benefits. So we'll just wait to see what Joe Girardi does on opening day.
Right. Next one. Who does the second? You read them all off because you have all the names.
Yeah. Second question comes from my good friend Anthony. I worked with him at the Orioles Stadium, actually. This question is, do you think Jonathan Scope starts in at least 150 games at second base this year, or is Ryan Flaherty going to not make that happen?
If Scope stays healthy, he starts 150. Easy. Both, yeah. Scope and Flaherty are Buck guys. That's pretty evident, but Scope gets all the starts. Flaherty is the guy they go to for when you get a day's rest, or Hardy's injured. One of the two.
Flaherty is too valuable of a utility player to take starts away at second base from Jonathan Scope.
Yeah.
It's all about if Scope stays healthy. I'm hoping he does this year because he is my breakout candidate for the Orioles. So hopefully.
Yeah, I'm 30 homers for Scope this year. Easy. I wouldn't say easy, but I'm predicting 30 homers.
I would love to see 30 homers. I feel like he picks up some of the slack that, Hardy leaves behind, and maybe Weathers, in the homer category. At least you still have Davis, Jones, Machado. I can easily see Scope starting 150. I think him and Manny will do a competition who starts more games.
Well, I mean, Manny did start 162 the past season, so.
he's got that going for him right now, at least.
Yeah. but yeah, I'm excited to see Scope this season. I definitely think he starts 150. It's pretty evident that they see Scope as their second baseman of the future. It's just about whether or not he progresses, which it does look like he is. I mean, the beginning of last year toward and compare that to him at the end, there's definitely a difference, and it does look like he's getting better.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And finally, our...
No, we have two more. We have another one after.
Well, no, these are from the same person.
Oh, okay.
So these final two questions come from my good friend Ryan Blake. You can find him on Twitter at RyGuyBlake. You can also listen to his podcast, The Backwards K. Search them on iTunes and give them a good rating. Shameless plug for them. You're welcome, guys. His first question is, do you think the Orioles pitchers can return to 2014 form, or is it last year's showing more than likely going to be the norm for them? Now, if you don't already know, the Orioles pitching in 2014 was above average, or no, they were above their average, at least. They were overachievers. They, you know, everyone contributed. It was amazing. And then, of course, 2015, they came back down to earth, and they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
All right, Dennis. So, yeah, I definitely think this year's probably going to be a little bit more towards the norm for them, especially since they haven't added anybody yet, which is disappointing. But I definitely think this is going to be a norm year for the Orioles pitching staff. 2014 was definitely an outlier. Everybody performed above expectations, and the rotation has only gotten worse this year with Chen leaving. So, you know, I'm not too big on the rotation this year at all.
I see Tillman bouncing back a little bit just because he did at the end of last season. As far as Miguel Gonzalez, I think his time is running out. He always loves to prove me wrong, though. Ubaldo Jimenez is, you know, middle of the road four ERA guy. He's a number four, number five on any other team. He's a number two in Baltimore. And then, you know, this year is going to be a big test for Kevin Gausman to see if, because reports are he's developing a third pitch to get right-handers out, which
he's been developing like a third pitch for like the past 3 years. I've heard different things about that, but go on.
Yeah, it's tough to say. He wants to get righties out because that's where he struggles the most.
It's weird considering he's a right-hander, but
yeah, it's really complicated. I don't have the stats right in front of me directly, but that's what he wants to do, is help get right-handers out. So I definitely feel that if Gausman gets more to form and what they think he's going to be, but if and then there's, of course, Dylan Bundy. Does he go into the rotation or does he go to the bullpen?
He has to be on the roster.
So he has to be in one of those. You have Vance Worley as an option. You have Tyler Wilson, Mike Wright. These are young guys. It's just, well, except for Vance Worley, obviously.
TJ McFarland.
No. I'd rather have no lefty starters than have TJ McFarland in the rotation. So it's a thing of which one of these number five guys do you want? Personally, I'd go Tyler Wilson. I don't really like Mike Wright as a starter. I like him more as long relief. Like, say your guy only goes four innings and you need the rest for the bullpen. Mike Wright is your guy. I think Tyler Wilson would be better fit for the rotation. Hopefully they all, I feel like they're all going to get starts in spring. I mean, well, that's obvious. And of course, you know, like the Brian Mattis start and then the TJ McFarland.
Brian Mattis for starter, said no one ever.
And then, like, you know, you might get a Jason Garcia start in there just to test the waters with Buck. You'll get those weird moments. Spring training is like, now starting pitcher for the Orioles, Jason Garcia, and you think, what the hell are they doing?
Right.
But as far as the Orioles rotation goes, I think it's going to be middle to bottom of the league average. I think it's going to be probably like around the 20th best in the league.
Yeah, I think best case scenario is league average. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. We've talked about this before, but having an average rotation but a stellar bullpen seems to be the big thing now.
Kansas City's, you saw they won the World Series with that. The Yankees made the playoffs last year with that kind of motto. Obviously, they have a little bit better starting pitching than the Orioles, but it's still not what they want it to be. The Red Sox have probably the best rotation in the American League East right now, and then it's probably Toronto and then Tampa Bay. If not, I'd say Tampa Bay number two.
Well, we can talk about that later. But anyway, I definitely think that best case, like I said, best case scenario, league average, but not a bad thing. All right, last one.
All right, and then the last question, also from Ryan, is would you rather fight 10 Brian Roberts-sized bears or 3 Chris Davis-sized bears?
Huh. I don't want to fight any bears. I'm
I
not
would
Leonardo DiCaprio.
only fight the 10 Brian Roberts-sized bears because Brian Roberts is only 2 inches taller than me.
See, but you're still fighting a bear.
Well, I'm not fighting Chris Davis muscle-sized bear. I'm fighting skinny Brian Roberts bears.
True.
And I can take on 10. I can't.
I mean, a Brian Roberts-sized bear is like a cub. Like it's a bear cub.
Yeah. For Oof, it's tough. It's not like the duck-sized horse or the horse-sized duck.
Yeah. It's
It's
a fucking bear.
it's a bear. Honestly, your three Davis bears, it's tough because Davis is what, 6'3",
The dude is like six, yeah, like 6'3", 6'5", like pure muscle.
and then he's just all muscle. Brian Roberts was like 5'9", 160. I could take on 10 of those.
See, I'd take my chances with the Davis Bears, to be honest, because it's a lot less bears, because that's still 10 bears. Now, another thing is, are they all at once or is it one by one?
Oh, if it's all at once, I'm taking the 3. But if it's one at a time, I'm going the 10.
Right.
I feel like 3 on me at once, I could handle. 10, I would be demolished.
Yeah, they could just swarm me. That's he needs to clarify. I want better questions. What was his name?
Name's Ryan.
Ryan. I want better questions, Ryan.
We need clarity because we definitely don't deliver it.
Yeah. Clarity is clear. No clarity here.
So, my answer ultimately is 10 Brian Roberts size bears.
I'm gonna go with the three Chris Davis size bears. I'll take my chances with three bears.
Good luck.
All right, well, that wraps up.
What would be more entertaining, watching a bear play second base the size of Brian Roberts or a bear hitting home runs the size of Chris Davis? Like an actual bear. Like knows how to function as a human, plays baseball. I would go for the mashing the home runs.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about a bear like hitting baseballs, just look at David Ortiz. But no, I'd like to see a bear in the field. That would be interesting because I don't know, it's a bear in the out in the infield. Like that reminds me of that Naked Gun skit where it's like there's a tiger in the infield or something like that. It's one of those things. But yeah, there's a bear in the infield. But yeah, I'd like to see a bear in the infield.
It would definitely be, it would be a sight to see, honestly, because he'd have to put the glove on. You'd have to get like a special glove for him made. He would have to, get all the way to the ground to like field the ground ball and then throw it, obviously, to second or first or wherever. I feel like a bear could function as a catcher because he could just be on all fours and then throw up the one and then just toss it back.
Between Two Birds, the only podcast that discusses the the specifics of a bear playing baseball.
And then messes up the words trying to describe
Yeah.
said.
So, yeah, I'm horrible.
I would pay money to watch bears play baseball.
It,
I would. I can't. I already pay enough to watch like humans do it. I want to see bears play baseball.
I try to see bears play baseball. Why
I spend $40 on a Chris Davis fathead. I want to watch bears play baseball, damn it. Is that really that funny?
Oh, it is to me. It also probably has to do with the fact that I'm tired, but oh my god.
Like, now batting, Papa Bear, and he just smacks one over the left field wall.
God damn it, Connor.
What would be the best animal to watch play baseball?
God like damn it, Connor.
I would personally go for, like, a sea creature. Like, if dolphins could, like, stand, withstand breathing air enough to actually play, I would watch a bunch of dolphins. Can you just imagine a dolphin swinging a bat and then just, like, hops on its fin around the bases? Please, please be okay.
This podcast has officially jumped the shark.
Oh, another animal I like to see play is baseball, a shark.
Oh my god. All right, that wraps up the mailbag. We're done. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. I need to calm down. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk some baseball news now. You ready, Connor? You psyched?
Yeah.
Top of the hour, we're going to talk about Cespedes signs with the Mets. He has a 3-year deal with an opt-out after the first year, and that makes me a sad Orioles fan.
It makes me an okay Orioles fan. Just simply because he's not going to play on an AL team. I'm always a sad Orioles fan.
Yeah, the Orioles supposedly had a 5-year offer on the table, and I was big on Cespedes because he didn't have that qualifying offer attached to him. I think that was the big thing.
I'm big on Cespedes simply because he's an outfielder, while the Orioles have one, and his name is Adam Jones. But
he's an outfielder with, and his heart's still beating, so we're good.
Yeah, I mean, there's Kim, and then whatever Nolan Reimold is at this point anymore. I think he's on his, like, third neck or something. But as far as Cespedes, I'm surprised he was offered more money with the Nationals, I think, and then longer years. But I can definitely see the opt-out after this year, just simply because the market for free agent outfielders is weak. Only out there is really Carlos Gomez and one other player who I forget off the top of my head, and I don't have it in front of me because I'm a bad podcast host. But it is definitely a better year for Cespedes after the 2016 season to be a free agent, where he will get more money and possibly maybe go to the Nationals at that point. Who knows?
I don't, I think it would actually kind of, it might not help, it definitely wouldn't help him a lot to see that contract down. I mean, if he underperforms, you know, you stick with the contract. But he'd become a free agent for the 2019 season, offseason, and I think that would be a bad move with him because everyone is hyping up the 2018 season, because the offseason, because that's when all the big names come out, like Manny, Machado, Adam Jones. It's 2018, right?
2019.
Oh, yeah. He would. Okay, then he would be in it. He would be in that big mix of a bunch of star players. So that would, I don't think that'd be a good thing for him. Even if, I mean, he would be older at that point, but it definitely wouldn't work in his favor.
No, he, and especially he'd be 3 years older. He's 31 now. If I'm him, I'm taking the opt out after my first year. Testing
he's
30,
not 31.
Oh, he's 30? Well, yeah. Then he'll be 31. He'll be 33 after the deal, which is still not, you know, great considering the people that'll be out on the market. Right. If any of them do hit the market, we don't know. Right. There's always in-season negotiations. But for Cespedes, being 31 on the outfield market isn't terrible, just simply because compared to next year's class, there's not that many talent. That's not that much talent out there. So they're going to have to overpay for a Cespedes if they miss somebody from this past year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a right fielder with a power, and, you know, he's at worst, he's an average fielder with a big arm.
With a very big arm.
All right, I think that pretty much sums up our feelings about that. Moving on, Justin Upshon You know, Justin Upton's lesser-known brother signs with the Tigers. That makes me a happy Orioles fan because I don't think Justin Upton was worth giving up a pick.
I didn't follow the Padres this past season. I've never followed the Padres, but
Nobody follows the Padres. What are you talking
apparently not.
about?
He apparently struggled very badly last season. He didn't hit that well, I think. You have his stats in front of you.
He hit 251 with 26 homers, 81 RBIs, and 150 games. So
That might have to do with playing in a pitcher's park out in San Diego, but he's played in that division before with the Diamondbacks,
I mean
and
his OPS almost touched 800, so
he's still a solid player. I don't think he's worth the money he got, and I think Detroit is just desperate for something at this point. They have the pieces to build a contender. They struggled mightily last year. They dealt with injuries to Cabrera and Avila throughout the entire year, so they never really had their full team. I love their middle of the lineup, though, of Cabrera, JD Martinez, and Justin Upton. And then I do like their pitching staff, Daniel Norris, Justin Verlander. I think Verlander bounces back a little bit this year.
Everyone keeps on saying that the window is closing on the Tigers, and it seems like they do everything they can to extend it, and it works somehow. But yeah, Upton's contract, he had 6 years, $132 million. And he can opt out after the 2017 season, which
Still the big thing for Detroit is they have no bullpen. They acquired Justin Williams from the Yankees, but that's all that they've done.
yeah, Justin Wilson is a, I think he got overlooked in that bullpen with Betances and Miller, but he's definitely an above average reliever.
From what I got, he was average. He would let up, runs every now and then, like all pitchers do, but he is what he is. He's not anything special.
So I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see how the Tigers perform this year, and as well as Justin Upton. I didn't really want the Orioles to sign him, just because I didn't think he was worth that money or that draft pick. All right, you say something?
No, he definitely isn't worth the draft pick. If they were going to go big money on an outfielder and waste the draft pick, I would go Dexter Fowler.
You're such a big Dexter Fowler fanboy.
He's a switch-hitting outfielder that has speed and is a good fielder. That is something the Orioles need. Do you
When have the Orioles ever been known for speed?
they've tried it. It wouldn't hurt.
Dexter Fowler in almost 600 at bats hit 250 last year.
He solves your leadoff problem, first of all. Secondly, he can hit from the left-hand side of the plate. He's going to be in a hitter's park in Camden Yards with a short porch in right field. He can play left or right. He's particularly a center fielder, but he won't move Adam Jones. He put him in right when he put Kim in left, and then you got two. You might get better production out of Kim. You don't know. I still think you signed Dexter Fowler. He might be like the last one to sign, though, honestly.
I mean, it is kind of weird that he's been sitting out there on the market. And
It's kind of like the Nelson Cruz, Kendrys Morales situation. They have the draft pick tied to them, so nobody wants them. When I think Ken Rosenthal was like, screw the draft pick, just sign these guys already.
All
You can
right.
get the proven MLB talent, or you can risk it in the draft. That's how I see it, at least.
I can't find. Okay, well, I'm pulling up Fangraphs, and the Fangraphs streamer has Dexter Fowler hitting 250, 347, 387 next season, and they have Nolan Reimold hitting 241, 312, 383.
They're virtually the same player.
Yeah, according to streamer, at least.
Well, you take predictions for what they are. I mean, that they've predicted the Orioles to finish in last place ever since 2012.
True, but I don't know if I don't know he if he's if they if everything's being signaled for him to, you know, not return to the player he once was. I don't know if he's worth that draft pick, to be honest. That's the big thing with me. I wouldn't be against signing him if he didn't have that draft pick attached to him, but I don't think he's worth that draft pick.
If he ended up signing maybe just like a 2-year deal, I think it would just I would think it would be fine for a draft for the draft pick. But at this point, a 3 or 4 year deal is hard to, sell to the fan base of here's why we got rid of this pick. And then if he struggles, it'll be even worse.
Right. All right, moving on. Corey Dickerson, this just happened as we're a couple hours ago as we're recording this. Corey Dickerson and a minor league pitcher get traded to the Rays for Jake McGee and another minor league pitcher. Rockies got fleeced.
I don't know why. I mean, words and things. So the Rockies send, Chris Dickerson, Chris, or Corey Dickerson. Chris Dickerson was an outfielder for the Orioles in 2013. Corey Dickerson
Is much better.
is a product of Coors Field.
Ooh.
Away from Coors Field, he is a 249 hitter. He is not that good to me. If I had to take any of the Rockies outfielders, it would be Charlie Blackmon. And now I don't think he gets traded because there's a reason I think it only cost McGee of the Rays to go get Dickerson. And that's because you don't know what he does outside the Coors Field. He's had 3 MLB seasons. He's only had 15 home runs away from Coors Field. It's like a 249. I tweeted out the stat, the slash line he had. It wasn't impressive to me.
Last season at home, he hit 395, 446, 697. Last year away, he hit 257, 272, 453.
He is one of the bigger products of Coors Field on the Rockies.
But the thing is, he has the same amount of home runs at home and away.
Well, home runs only count for one part of that. You still have the lower numbers, the batting average on base, and then the slugging. Slugging. It's just tough to say, oh, well, he's going to the Rays. He's going to a division with some good hitters, parks in Fenway, New York, Tampa, Toronto, and Baltimore. But does that match what Coors Field is? I don't think it does.
Right.
I still think that helps because he's a good defender. It'll help the Rays' defense, if anything, with Souza and then Kevin Kiermaier, and I'm very jealous of that outfield.
Corey Dickerson's really weird because I'm looking at his slash line by ballpark, and he has that big 395 at Coors. But if you go to like say another pitcher's park, he played 3 games versus the Marlins. Last year, he hit 300, 300, 500 in 10 at bats in 3 games. But you get he also plays in a division that has a lot of pitcher's park because there's Dodger Stadium, there's Petco. They're not in the same division, are they? I'm bad with my divisions.
No, they are.
Okay.
It's
Yeah,
the that.
Petco, there's Chase Field, there's AT&T Park, which he does have a good slash line in, which is weird.
It's probably
Again.
just more at bats, the better you are, the better chance you have to hit there.
What at AT&T?
Well, they're a division rival, so they're going to play there more often.
Well, he plays at Petco more often, and he hit 095 in 20 at bats at Petco.
See, it's just one of those weird anomalies, I think. Overall, I don't like his numbers on the road. I wouldn't want him on the Orioles. I don't know what it would have taken of the Orioles to get him. It took McGee, and Jake McGee is the Rays' closer. It wouldn't be Zach Britton level of closing. It would be like a Brian Mattis, maybe, or something like that.
Wait, did you just compare Jake McGee to Brian Mattis?
Well, and it's hard to say.
Jake
I don't.
McGee is a I see. I'm big on McGee because he throws hard and he's a left-handed pitcher. I mean, he had an ERA of 2.41 out of the bullpen last year and 37 innings pitched. That might also be a reason because he might have. I think if he only pitched 37, he was probably hurt. So they're probably and he's had a couple years in the league already. So.
The Rays know when to trade away their guys.
True. Oh, he's There it is. He's coming up on 5 years of service time. He'll be a free agent in 2018. So
not too far into the future. If the Rockies ever become anything, they have another decent arm in the bullpen. They did sign Jason Mott and another reliever. I can't remember who. It's another righty. He's kind of older, but
Axford?
They did.
No.
No, it's not Axford. He was on the Cubs, and I think I'm thinking of Jason Mott. But they did sign another reliever. They signed him, like, the same, like, day. So they do have a solid kind of back end of the bullpen. It's nothing to write home about. But the Rockies are kind of always my dark horse team just because I love Coors Field. I love the offense they have. But now that they don't have Troy Tulowitzki, I don't think that's the case.
Well, the thing with the Rockies is that they really need – they keep on trying to get, like, this amazing pitching staff, and the fact is you're probably never going to have an amazing pitching staff because of your ballpark. You need to get league average to a little bit above league average players, and then you need to have a lineup that just mashes taters. Like, in my opinion, that's what the Rockies have failed to do. They need a lineup that just completely hits the shit out of the ball.
They need what they had in 2007 when they went to the World Series. Average pitching, just monster home runs. They had Matt Holliday, Todd Helton, Troy Tulowitzki. That team was very impressive.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. Like the Rockies seem to get mismanaged every offseason, it feels like.
I follow a couple Rockies fans. Some, they blame the owner more than anything, I feel like.
Who doesn't blame their owner?
That's true.
Come on, this is sports. but yeah, it's just weird because you have that ballpark and you're not using it. I don't know. There's a reason I'm not a GM. I just have a mediocre podcast.
It would be tough to sell to a top starting pitcher. Hey, come to Coors Field.
Yeah, extremely hard.
Like, and then the guy goes, "Well, my career ERA right here is 6." No, it's a great place to pitch.
And you're never going to get any of those one-year deal guys. Like, those guys looking to rebound. No one's going to come to rock to the Colorado for a one-year deal. Come on.
Yeah, you go to, like, San Diego.
Yeah, to, like, San Diego. You don't come to Camden. You go to an NL pitcher's park, like Cincinnati.
Yeah, like Cincinnati. Maybe, like, a Minnesota, if you want to go AL.
Yeah. If you have to go AL, like Minnesota is one. Yeah, definitely.
Or Oakland.
Oakland, yeah. All right, well, moving on. One more free agent signing. Doug Fister, I hardly knew her. He signed with the Astros a one-year, $7 million deal. And that makes me an even sadder O's fan.
Yeah, it's a little rough because, hey, there's that one-year guy. That the Orioles had a chance to go after. I feel like I saw a good tweet. I think it was from O's Uncensored. I was like, they just probably have Doug Fister's old phone number, right? It's a little disheartening just because I wanted Doug Fister. I feel like a rebound year for him would have helped. I wouldn't have mattered. I wouldn't have cared if he left after that just because, you know, if he helped this team win a World Series this year, I wouldn't care.
Yeah, well, if he performs well, you slap a qualifying offer on him and get the draft pick. If he doesn't, you let him walk. No one loses on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
The only person who could lose is the player if they don't perform well, and that's on them.
Yeah, like it goes back to with Nelson Cruz. That was the one-year deal. They slapped the qualifying offer on him. He went to Seattle. The Orioles got the draft pick for him.
Yeah.
So, of course, fans are going to complain, well, he's a big part of our offense. Well, he was here for 1 year. He was a big part of our offense. You know, our run differential would have taken a dip, and it, or not a run differential, just run scored, and it actually went up. So,
yeah. Well, I'm big on Fister because he's a ground ball pitcher.
Which the Orioles don't have.
Yeah. The Orioles never get any ground ball pitchers, and that is frustrating because you don't want to be a fly ball pitcher in Camden Yards. That's just a recipe for disaster.
Wei-Yin Chen was a flyball pitcher. He is just lucky he let up a lot of solo shots.
Yeah, there's a lot of luck in Chen's career considering he's a flyball pitcher. I wouldn't be surprised to see him do well in Miami just because of that park and him being a fly ball pitcher.
I think it fits him well. Oh, Wei-Yin Chen to the Marlins. Well, we'll touch on that in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a minute. I mean, there's not much more I can say about Doug Fister. I'm just continually frustrated at the fact that the Orioles passed on both Scott Kazmir and Doug Fister to, you know, above average. Well, Kazmir's above average. Fister had the ability to have a really good bounce back year, and you know, they had no pick. They had no qualifying offer attached to them, and you know,
they just flopped. I would have. Scott Kazmir would have been a dream. It would have made this offseason feel a lot more comfortable for me.
Definitely.
Just because it's the lefty in the rotation, it raises Wei-Yin Chen's price, and then you get the draft pick back.
Right.
So, I mean, you're going to get the draft pick for Chen anyway, just because he's not going to come back. So you might as well just say, "Hey, fuck it, we'll go get Scott Kazmir instead."
Yeah, and yeah, Scott Kazmir is a lefty too.
And then he's going to a pitcher's park in L.A. But here's the thing with Kazmir. He got the qualifying. He didn't get not the qualifying offer. He got a opt-out after the first year. He was the one that started that trend, and then Cespedes followed through.
Really? Is Kazmir going to opt out of the first year?
Yeah. Everyone was like, wow, that's a really short time for an opt-out after the first year. That's why the Orioles ultimately didn't get him, I think, just because the Orioles do not do opt-outs.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what it is. Moving on. The Hall of Fame voting took place while we were away. A little bit of old news, but we had our own ballots that we casted, and I don't remember what mine was. Do you?
I had like Griffey, Bonds, Clemens, those kind of guys. Tim Raines.
Yeah, well, Griffey made it on his first year. He had a record, wasn't it? 99.3% of the vote.
99.3.7, one of those.
Yeah. I have it in front of me. It's 99.3, and Mike Piazza made it in. Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, Trevor Hoffman, Curt Schilling are notable people that got close. And Alan, well, there's a bunch of people that's not going to make it. I'm disappointed that Jim Edmonds isn't going to have another year on the ballot because he didn't get the qualifying percentage.
A 5%?
Yeah, he only had 2.5.
That's rough.
Yeah. And Alan Trammell is off the ballot. It was his 15th year. He was grandfathered in the new rule. Mark McGwire, he's out. It was his 10th year on the ballot. a lot of people are disappointed on Trammell because he has a symptom of he played during the same time frame as Cal Ripken. So he kind of suffered from that considering he was a shortstop.
Oof, that's got to be rough, you know. That's got to feel like any shortstop that played during Jeter's time.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get overshadowed, definitely, because of you're playing against a superstar, more or less.
Yeah. I never really looked through Trammell's numbers. I've heard the name a lot.
I have it in front of me. His career slash line is .285, .357, .415.
That's Hall of very good for me. I don't think
I don't know what his defense was, so I can't call that.
Yeah. Like, I'd have to look at his defense, but he sounds like he was probably actually a really good player.
Yeah. It's kind of it is what it is. I mean, I'm saying that a lot lately, but yeah. Other notable players that didn't make it. David Eckstein's not going to get another year on the ballot.
No, he got like one vote.
The king of grit. He got two votes. Two votes.
Two. Oof.
Mike Mussina, his third year on the ballot, he got 43% of the votes needed.
He got up by 20%, actually, and I'm probably the only Orioles fan that wants Mike Mussina in the Hall of Fame.
The thing that plays well for him is his postseason numbers.
Yeah, and then he has more career strikeouts than Jim Palmer.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
He has one less career win, or like one more.
Right.
And like he has more strikeouts in less years than Palmer. And he's, like, close in wins.
Right.
And then he has, like, the fourth highest or fifth highest WAR out of all Orioles players of all time.
Question about Mussina. If he goes in as an Oriole, do the fans forgive him and do the Orioles retire his number?
Ooh, they've retired all the Orioles retired numbers now are Hall of Famers. So I think, yes. Do the Orioles fans forgive him? I don't know. They love to put the people that are in Legends Park on a pedestal. I compared Frank Robinson to Mike Mussina, kind of unfair, but I got shit on for it because God forbid you compare anybody to the great Frank Robinson. You know, Frank was great, but he's not free from comparison. He wasn't here for that long. He picked the Orioles, you know.
Because he won a World Series with us, didn't he?
Yeah, and he loved Baltimore. Yeah, they won in 66 with him. So, you know, he wasn't here that long. His numbers weren't that great. Compare that to Messina, who's probably the fourth or fifth best Oriole of all time, second best pitcher of all time. He, you know, behind
second
Palmer.
Second best Orioles pitcher, clarification.
What did I say? Second best pitcher of all time?
Yeah.
That's putting him on a pedestal. Yeah. But, you know, great strikeout pitcher, great playoff appearances. I rewatch him against Cleveland all the time in the playoffs from like 97. And it was just amazing. I think they retire his number. I don't think the fans forgive him, though, just because they're stubborn.
Stuck in their ways. All right, well, segueing from all that, let's hop into a little bit of Oriole news. There's not much that really happened besides, you know, Chris Davis re-signing with the Orioles.
Whoop-de-doo.
We talked a lot about that on an episode of Baltimore Sports Today, so I recommend you go listen to that, because we're just going to touch on it a little bit briefly. Yay or nay, Connor?
Eh.
Eh.
Middle. I'm pretty sure everyone kind of has the same reaction, unless you're Chris Davis is like super fan or something.
Twitter.
Well, okay, we won't get involved in that. Mrs. Chris Davis, but
oh God damn it, you said it.
you just can't say it three times or else she appears. It's like 2 a.m. I'm allowed to criticize people for their lifestyles. Chris Davis, you know, I like the deferred money.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
like,
definitely the big selling point of that contract to me.
And it doesn't have interest on it. Unlike, I think, did Bobby Bonilla have interest?
Yeah, Bobby Bonilla had like 5% interest or something like that.
Yeah.
Something crazy. Stupid.
So if you're gonna make like Chris Davis jokes and replace with Bobby, it's not worth it because it's not like the same kind of structured deal.
Yeah. I'm happy that they did it just because I don't want to see a platoon of like Mike Trumbo and Christian Walker at first base.
Orioles acquired Mike Trumbo.
What?
You said Mike Trumbo.
Yeah.
His name is Mark.
Oh. My bad. Mark Trumbo. Why did I call him Mike Trumbo?
Mike Trout.
Yeah, like I said, I'm happy that Davis is back just because I don't want to see that at first base. And what's interesting about all that is that they signed him and then they gave they offered that 5-year deal to Cespedes, which is meaning that okay, so maybe Chris Davis's contract isn't necessarily on the big payroll. Like, it's separate from the payroll. Like, the payroll sits by itself, and then there's Davis's contract.
Do you think that's how it goes?
I think that's the way. Maybe. I have a feeling that's the way it looks to me outside looking in.
I could see that. I've never, like, thought of it that way. So it just sounds foreign to me, but
I mean, anytime you have an owner get involved, I mean, people are going to shit on Angelos because, you know, he's a meddling owner. But, I mean, when you sign a big guy, when you sign a guy to a big deal like that, you have to get the owner involved just because of money and payroll, how it's going to play out for you. So.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like Angelos doesn't get enough credit for what he's done. Obviously, he's overseen the Orioles during their worst period, but he, I think, unfairly gets, you know, he's not the world's greatest owner, but he's not the world's worst.
Yeah, a lot of people blame him for things that are probably out of his control.
You know, like, why can't the Orioles develop pitching? It's all Angelos' fault. It's like the thanks Obama meme.
Yeah.
At this point, but people don't say it as a joke.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely There's definitely some undeserved flack.
But that's going to come with any position of power, honestly.
True.
Especially when the product what isn't what you want.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. I think it's like the 20th time I've said that in the past couple minutes.
Your buzzwords. It is what it is, and moving on.
Moving on. It is what it is.
Mine's like and well, you know, and like
incoherent sounds. The clock chiming.
The clock chiming. Hey, we got like 20 minutes before it goes off again.
All right. Well, moving on.
Moving on.
Say goodbye to David Lowe, Steve Pierce, and the Chenner. David Lowe signs with the Phillies. Steve Pierce signed a contract with the Rays. It's like 1 year, $2 million. And Chen signed. I don't know what Chen's deal was. Do you remember?
3 years. I forgot the dollar amount. I haven't been following that much outside the Orioles news lately. Outside of. No, just Orioles news. Just
no,
because.
Chen got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, he got a 6-year deal, but there is four player options in it. It's basically a 2-year deal with 4 player options.
Oh, good for him. 6 years, wow, I was off by a lot.
But yeah, it's structured very weirdly because it's 2 years at. It's at 8.6 and 11.6 respectively, and then it's a $12.6 million player option, then a 22.6 player option, and a 24.6 player option.
Oh, that's Jeffrey Loria and the Marlins for you.
Yeah, and then he gets that last year if he gets either if he has 180 innings pitched in 2020 or 360 innings pitched between 2019 and 2020.
That is kind of, barring injury, that he might actually do that because he is probably one of the more consistent guys in the league.
Yeah. I mean,
hard to say with age, and then he's been fairly free of injury. He had, you know, 2013, he dealt with some injuries,
he
but
had some oblique and abdominal stuff going on. That's a big thing with him.
Yeah, but like when he pitched back in Japan, he had Tommy John, so he got that out of his way before he actually came to America. So I feel like outside like the oblique stuff, he's been relatively healthy. I feel like he could definitely do that kind of innings and get that part of his deal.
Right. Yeah, it's just I wanted – if we didn't get Kazmir or Fister, you know, it would have kind of made sense to keep him. But that's just – that's too big of a contract in my opinion.
Especially with all the opt-outs and all that. The Orioles, like I said, don't do that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's a lot of player options, so nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah. If you had to say which player is definitely not coming back after 2015, I would definitely say Wei-Yin Chen.
Yeah.
Looking back, like if you asked me that in like July, I'm like, yeah, Wei-Yin Chen's not coming back.
Right.
But if you look at it, the Orioles kept 3 of their 6 free agents.
Yeah, they retained their guys.
Darren O'Day, Matt Wieters, Chris Davis.
Well, one of them not necessarily by choice. They just gave the qualifying offer to Wieters.
They kept them at least. It makes the fans happy, honestly, because they like Wieters.
Yeah.
Particularly, I wouldn't have minded if he left. Because they retained Davis, so I wouldn't have minded Wieters left, just simply out of, you know, I like Caleb Joseph more. And I view like Wieters as like a DH now, but then with Trumbo,
yeah.
What do you do with the DH? It's hard to say. You have options at least, which I like.
Yeah, options are definitely a good thing. I'm not necessarily disappointed that Lowe and Pierce left.
I like Steve Pierce. Great 2014 year.
He's a great story. That's the best thing about him.
Arguably. The best Oriole in 2014 outside of like maybe Adam Jones and Zach Britton, but he was a one trick pony. Is that the saying?
Yeah, one trick pony.
Yeah, He had his one good year. He had solid appearances every now and then, but he has dealt with injury before 2014. 2015, he just didn't show up, and then he didn't get the chance to play because they were rotating the outfield every day, and he struggled, so he didn't get the chance to play, obviously,
yeah.
Which sucked because he probably would have done better than Travis Snyder and Dylan Youngin, whoever else they threw out, like Deaza. And all those guys. Oh, my God. That was so dreadful.
Lowe actually sent out a tweet. He got into a Twitter fight with somebody, go figure, about the fact that he made it kind of clear that he was a little bit upset about his playing time because it's hard to he said it's hard to perform when you're only batting, like, once a week. Or you're only playing, like, once a week. Which I can see where he's coming from, but it's, like, you got to actually perform to get playing time.
Yeah, like, you get your playing time, but what do you do with it? Oh, go 0-for-4. Or you get the pinch run and steal and get thrown out at second. Because he wasn't a smart – David Lowe wasn't a smart baseball player to me. He wasn't smart on the base paths. He played good defense. I just didn't think he was a smart baseball player.
What was more funny, though, about that whole exchange on Twitter is that he did it with the fake Nick Markakis account.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the cartoon Nick Markakis account, which is really weird. But he's very good at getting under people's skin, so take that for what it is.
Well, David Lowe fell for the bait.
Yeah.
Rule one, don't tweet.
Yeah, rule one, don't tweet. Two last pieces of news. LJ Hose gets DFA'd. Sad face. You're really upset about this, Connor.
Yes. I feel... If anything, he'll go just be in Norfolk, just because
who keep in Norfolk because it'll make Jones happy.
Yeah, like the saddest part about this was what he tweeted.
What did he tweet?
He here I can pull it up for you. I'm on Twitter right now because I was reading that David Lowe thing.
Oh.
He tweeted at simply AJ10 maybe next time.
Aww.
And then Adam Jones goes. Where is it? He tweeted today. He goes, "It ain't over, pimp."
Oh, the bromance is still alive.
Adam Jones tweeted the Florida Man account, and oh my God, I've never been more happy in my life. the Florida Man Twitter account is my favorite. If you don't follow it, go follow it. It's kind of amazing to see these two from Florida fighting, and neither of them are wearing jean shorts. And it's Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush from the debate tonight.
That's great. I love it.
And then there's Jones tweeting about the Terps. And then, do you, Cameron Newton? Do you, pimp? Hashtag stay hungry.
I love Jonesy's Twitter.
Oh, he's the best.
All right. Next piece of news. B-Rob said when you said, was it MLB Today?
Like MLB Network Radio.
Oh, okay, MLB Network Radio. He said that he wants the Orioles to sign Yovani Gallardo.
Yeah, I listened to it. His explaining was with just the consistency. His
explanation
was the inconsistency in the rotation that he would help that Gallardo. Just from the fact that he was been the more like a consistent pitcher over the last couple of years, and that's what the Orioles don't have. Like with he mentioned, like Gonzalez, Tillman, he called Ubaldo Jimenez a mediocre pitcher.
Oh,
it's a little dig at Jimenez right there. He was never teammates with him. So
well, yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's. I didn't expect B-Rob to be so negative like that, but hey.
He said it like really hesitantly. He's like, "Is this the right word for him?" I want a job. I want a coaching job in the future.
No, it's probably all the concussions.
Oh, damn. B-Rob, it just sucks because B-Rob was my favorite player growing up. He didn't live up to that contract, and everyone started to hate him for it. And then, you know, he goes and hits himself on the head with a baseball bat. And what does he do? He concusses himself. And then he comes back, and what happens? He gets hurt again. Comes back, and what happens? He gets hurt again. Then what happens? He goes to the Yankees, and he's released before the trade deadline.
Yeah. Well, they released him because they didn't want to pay his bonus for at-bats, which is so dumb.
Well, it's not like the Yankees are hurting for money, for God's sake.
Yeah.
The Steinbrenners probably sleep in money. They have so much.
that picture from Breaking Bad with laying on a pile of money.
Yes. There's a reason in Fairly Odd Parents they were called the New York Bankies.
Oh, yeah, because, I remember that episode.
Because they have a lot of money.
All right. Going back to Gallardo, the reason I'm not a big fan of Gallardo is that his second half was shaky. Because his first half of last year, he had a 2.62 ERA in 19 starts. But then in the second half, he had a 4.69 ERA in 14 starts. And had a higher whip, a 1.7 whip compared to a 1.2 whip. And he has a pick attached to him.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
And he was kind of this guy in the Brewer system who was touted. He was supposed to be their next big thing, and he never panned out. So I'm just going to take this as kind of like a flash of brilliance, and that's it. So that's why I don't want the Orioles to sign Gallardo. And that's probably why no other team has signed him either, is because he's not worth it, unfortunately.
My biggest dig against him is that when he was with the Brewers in 2013, he had a walk-off against the Orioles as a pinch hitter. He wasn't even in the damn game.
I mean, but I can see what B-Rob was saying about consistency. Like, the guy puts up, he at least puts up, like, 180 innings. Like, he'll eat your innings for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. He's an innings eater, which the Orioles don't have.
I can see the point. He keeps his whip relatively low. It's around 1.3.
Honestly, it wouldn't be a horrendous signing. It wouldn't be a particularly good one if the Orioles got Gallardo.
I don't think it'd be a Jimenez signing.
No, because we know what Jimenez is. We didn't.
Well, I mean, I guess it's easy to say that in hindsight.
Well, we know what Gallardo is. We didn't really know what Jimenez was.
Yeah, true. Because he had that one like year and a half with the Rockies, and then he like fell off a cliff.
Yeah, and then he had that good half with the Indians, and then he's like, oh, big contract, and then he signed it. So.
At least with Gallardo, you know you're gonna get 180 innings. You're gonna get an ERA close to four. Like an ERA between 3.5 to 4.
Which I'm fine with.
Yeah, it's that pick is the big thing with me.
Baltimore Orioles fans settling for mediocrity.
Oh God.
Since 1998.
Since 19 forever. All right, well, that about wraps the show up. Where can we find you on Twitter, Connor?
You can find me on Twitter at Connor_Gersio. You can find me also at ConnorGersio.com, along with BaltimoreSportsReport.com. And you can find me at your local Chick-fil-A.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at @_Cody. I think that's it. The underscore's in there somewhere, as always.
Search Cody Colston. It'll come up.
Probably not. I'm not that well known. I got. I'm rocking that. What is it, like 280 followers.
That's more than a lot of people.
Yeah, you have over 1,000.
That's nothing. I don't care. my number of Twitter followers does not define me. If anything, it blows my ego more to make me want to delete my Twitter account.
All right, well, yeah, you can find me on Twitter there. You can find us on Baltimore Sports Today the past about 3 episodes. We were on for 3 episodes. Go look up on that on BSR.com and iTunes. Go check that out. And that about wraps the show up. So we're done. Any last words?
Sports.
Sports. All right, I'm going to go. Sports is a good one. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.